Welcome to Lemonology. This is our first series brought to you by the Pearl Lemon Group. This is a knowledge share space. My name is Aldine Dallas and I am the Growth Business Development Director at the Pearl Lemon Group. And with me today, I have Grant Pringle, one of our Senior Account Managers. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Aldine. Thank you very much for having me and looking forward to be part of the panel of discussion today.
Awesome. So Grant, you specialize in quite a lot of things in digital. You have experience in PPC, SEO.
I try at least.
All of those acronyms, right? Which we're going to help unpack a little bit, but specifically.
And I can only learn from the best, you know, so.
Yes. Well, with Deepak Shukla as our CEO and the founder of the Pearl Lemon Group, we literally have what we wish was a plugin, right? Where we could literally download everything that he holds on as his knowledge base and his IP. But today we're just going to focus on the simplicities of SEO because that's a great place to start. Any client or person or business owner who wants to start up and have some effective platform like a website that they want to bring in leads, sales, etc., we're going to showcase how that can be done and how Pearl Lemon can literally bring in our expertise to land them what it is that they need as far as effective digital goes. So if you don't mind, I have prepared a few questions and I would like to start off you showcasing all of your experience with PPC, OCR, SEO, lead gen, etc. that spans over an 11-year career. And let's see if we can bring something to the table that can help others. Are you good with that?
More than happy. The pressure is on.
Okay, so let's get going. So let's start where anybody would start from the beginning, competitor research. Tell us why that's so important when you're going to launch any form of campaign on digital.
Well, you know, Aldine, I think getting back to research, I think that's more, it's one of the main fundamental aspects from the beginning stage. I think, you know, you need to have a really good outline and understanding of your competitors in the market, just like any other business would in a market situation. You know, one needs to obviously look at the mass market. Are you niche scaled or, and more about looking at the online space, you know, you need to obviously ascertain and have a look, do at least a lot of research on your competitors' websites. See where they're kind of ranking on Google. And that's kind of where it starts off with, just to get a feel and understanding of where, of the comparative aspects between you and your competitors of where you lie from your current website, or if you even have a website at least, to kind of get that knowledge and understanding. So it's basically really good to do an assessment through that. And there's also a lot of kind of platforms such as Ahrefs, SEMrush, where you can do a competitor analysis through Google.
And websites are performing, see what it is that they're doing. Well, let's not run ahead of ourselves because we will get a little bit more into that detail. But I think the starting point is if I have a website as a business owner or a marketing person working for any form of business that has that what I call your digital billboard really, is you would start with a website audit, right? So tell me how that works.
Basically, Aldine, so a website audit, it's very important and it needs to be actually conducted on a regular basis. So there are a few platforms like SEMrush and Ahrefs as well where you can do these site audits. And it also helps to ensure that your site actually remains both functional and user-friendly. And it's also an excellent way to also catch issues that you might have missed, such as like broken links, slow page speed, orphan pages, that will obviously enable you to address these issues before they have a significant impact. So those are just kind of the main aspects of where site audits come in, and it also ensures the prolonging healthiness of your website in the future to come.
Awesome. So a layperson won't have to know all of that, but we as the specialists would offer that, right?
Because indeed,
we've got the platform registrations on our side, and then we offer that as part of our service. Is that
definitely? And I would say an audit is just like any other audit you would do, like if it's a tax VAT audit or finance audit, you know, taking your car in for a service, you know, it needs to kind of be serviced on a.
There you go. So what you've just said is that it's a specialist that does it because you won't know exactly how to do your car service.
Exactly.
Love that. That's what I was.
It's an analogy. Let's put it that way.
Love it. So then we get to the keyword research. So explain the different kinds of keywords and the importance of why you would want to research them.
So Aldine, first and foremost, there's two types of keywords that you need to aim for. You need to obviously aim for your primary keyword. And this is going to be the main topic of discussion or what your business speaks for, you know, the nature of your industry. So one needs to obviously do keyword research. That obviously involves, there's a few platforms, once again, like SEMrush, Ahrefs. You can even use Google Keyword Planner to conduct keyword research. So your primary keyword is the actual main focus of your content. So let's say if you're doing a blog article, for example, if you've got a specific topic you want to chat about, let's say dog food, a specific kind of dog food, you can obviously add that in and look for specific keywords relating to that. You only basically need to pick one primary keyword per page. So it should be relevant to your page's focus, brand identity, your products, and your services. So then comes in your secondary keywords. Those are kind of like supporting the main topic that you're going to be speaking about or that your business caters for. So you'll probably have several of these in place. Often they're kind of more granular than the primary keyword, and they represent subtopics that you're covering through an article. I would try to include them naturally in the content itself, because you shouldn't force them if they don't actually fit with what the topic of discussion is about. So that's where kind of secondary keywords fit in.
Okay. All right. So just a little side note, though. I know you get normal keywords and you get long-tail keywords. Can you just give an example of both of those? Because I know those terms are thrown around and sometimes people don't necessarily understand the difference. And you know what it's like? It's that awkward moment of, do I ask and make myself look stupid, or do I just actually say, hey, bring on a little explanation so that we're more informed, right? Because the more we know, the more our customers know, the more constructive the conversations can be. So tell us a bit more about that.
So I would say your long tail keywords are specifically in a sentence structure. So what an actual person will be looking for. Let's say if you're in the gaming sector and you're looking for a certain type of game, looking for Star Wars games, or looking for the latest Star Wars games. That's kind of a long tail keyword because it's specifically relating to a type of game to that degree. So whereas a normal keyword will just be games or Star Wars.
Got it.
You know, based on that. So that's just a brief analogy of that.
All right. Okay, that's great. So then you have a keyword search intent and search volume. Now, tell us more about how that works.
So basically, before I go into the keyword search intent, I also wanted to bring to everyone's attention, it's very important that your H1 headings, your H2 and H3 headings also include your relevant keywords. So I would say your H2 and H3s can include your secondary keywords, but as long as your H1 heading, which is the main title of your article, has to have your main primary keyword in. And then obviously in your articles, you need to include you need to obviously reiterate your main primary keyword and secondary keyword. Okay. Now, moving on to the search in volume and search intent. So this is a very important topic of discussion. So basically, Aldine, search intent needs to be always kept top of mind. It's actually arguably one of the most important things to get right in SEO.
Say an intent means what is it that I actually want? What am I looking for? What's
exactly
my intention? Okay.
Exactly. And it needs to relate to the industry that you're in. So basically, it also needs to relate what people are searching for. And this will normally show on the tools and systems when you actually do keyword planning. Okay. And it'll bring up secondary keywords based on your industry type.
Okay.
It's actually also good to do research based on what potential customers will be searching for, which could be branded or non-branded keywords. So basically, branded keywords are relating to a specific brand that someone would search for. So let's look at the automotive industry, for example. You would have Toyota.
Yes.
I am looking for a Toyota Corolla model for sale. Or I am looking for a new
secondhand Toyota or a red
label. Exactly. So secondhand would just be non-branded because it's not relating to a specific brand.
Okay. But I mean, secondhand Toyota is what I'm saying. It's still branded, but it's secondhand versus new. Does that still qualify?
Branded is if you actually include the brand of the name of the vehicle, like a Toyota Corolla, and then secondhand vehicles, if you're just searching for secondhand vehicles for sale, that will be non-branded.
Okay. And if I threw in, though, like if I wanted a Mercedes-Benz, but it's secondhand, in other words, I don't have the budget to purchase brand new, is that...
Well, that's kind of aiming towards a branded and non-branded in the same sense, but you've got your branded keyword, which is Mercedes-Benz. So
gotcha. Because sometimes it can be a little bit gray area. So to understand the difference, branded is just succinctly around that brand name. Anything Correct. That's added to that dilutes it, and it's no longer a branded keyword. It's a
And you also get general keywords, which is basically, you know, looking at Mercedes-Benz secondhand vehicle. That's kind of a very generalized keyword out there. But if you want to be more specific, you can go to location targeting in a specific geographic location in an area, and also price. You can look for prices, insert prices in your keywords, and that will narrow down the targeting for you as well. So that's just to give you a sense of an idea.
And I think if you're buying something online, like a consumable or a fast-moving product, it doesn't matter where it's coming from. But if it's that much harder to get delivered to your doorstep if it's coming from anywhere outside of your general region. So then the location is important in that instance.
Location is very important, you know. And just also getting back to search volume, Aldine, I think basically – as it actually implies, it relates to the volume of searches for a given keyword over a specific time frame. Okay. So there's actually a variety of factors that need to be taken into account, such as industry type, for example. So let's say if your industry is a very niche-focused industry, mostly in the B2B sector, you know, that kind of, you know, where I think keywords can range between 50 to 500 keywords per month, compared to the insurance industry, which is a much bigger market, the FMCG market, like you mentioned, let's refer to it as the mass consumer market, which is focused on areas such as insurance, like I said, you know, the FMCG industry, et cetera, et cetera. Those are going to generate a huge volume amounts of search intent through a month. But the two are relative to one another, because if you got 50 to 100 or let's say 50 to 300 keywords for a very niche market, those 50 to 300 keywords in 1 month can be a heck of a lot of keywords based on the search volume, because the industry is so niche. But for those amount of keywords, you can obviously generate a lot more ROI. So moving back to the automotive industry, you might have, let's say, at specific vehicles like Audi, right? Yes. Audi or VW, you're obviously going to generate, there's going to be more keywords relating to VW than Audi itself, because Audi is such a niche player in the automotive sector that there's less people with more disposable income
or 100%, yeah.
to buy that type of vehicle. So that's kind of...
Rolls Royce will have this much.
Yeah, exactly. So basically, just, you know, to conclude search volume, basically, it's all relative to the nature of industry type you are in as a business. And I think that's what you need to have an open mind about when it comes to search volume and search intent.
So right up front, when you're doing your competitor research, you can also see what your competitors are using for their keywords or how they're being found. And does that help you decide on what keywords you want so that you're not competing too much with a competitor? Is that a good way of looking at it?
Indeed it is. And there's obviously a few other platforms where you can do your competitor keyword research. And that will be on, like I said, SEMrush, Ahrefs, or Google Keyword Planner. There's another thing called glossary keywords. So this is, you know, taking things to the next level, where if you're just searching for a general type of topic of a keyword, this will actually go over and beyond to related keywords relating to that industry. So you will have a better chance of ranking in SEO with relatable keywords. And that's something where people don't, it's a big pie that's missing out in the industry. And I think there's a lot of opportunity that people can use glossary keyword terms to the best value of their to grow their SEO rankings.
Good to know. Now everyone's busy searching glossary keywords if you haven't heard about them before. Awesome. So let's move then on to content, right? Websites can be heavy with content and some websites have too little content. So what is it that you can share with us about content and how it's related to SEO and how it's influenced or how SEO influences content? I suppose there are two ways of looking at it.
Indeed. So basically, there's two aspects to content, right? So there's the quality of your content. And then we also need to bear in mind when content starts to decline. So I'll be kind of covering these actual two topics. But first, I think what we need to look at is how quality orientated is your content. And there's a saying, Aldine, that goes by content is king. And I think it plays one of the most crucial aspects of SEO. If you can't get your content right, you're not going to be picked up by Google from a credibility angle, and you're not going to trigger Google. Let's put it that way. Yes. So you need to have really good, compelling, and evergreen content.
Yes.
And if you want users not only to visit your site, but to return to your website, you need content that is original, comprehensive, and like I also said, evergreen.
Yes.
Basically, original content comes from they actually come across more than trust, and it enables audiences to understand your perspective and expertise, and it enables to actually build a relationship with you because, you know, while they're reading your article about a certain industry type, they're putting their trust in you to understand that. So, you know, you also need to have your facts backed up. You can also put other related sources relating to that. But as long as you've got the facts to back everything up, then you're A for a way. So, and looking at evergreen content, it also has a longer term value, which will actually continue to be relevant and generate traffic over a longer period. So things to mitigate to not include is like time frame, seasonal, you know, if you can avoid things like that.
It expires. So evergreen means it's fresh, it doesn't date, doesn't die. Is that what you mean?
Pretty much. And also when it comes to breaking stories, you want to try and avoid that angle because your content only will last for such time. So evergreen is longevity. You need to obviously adapt your content to the longevity.
That's going to land the meaning for those who don't know. Okay. Yes. Anything else on that, or shall we move on to
another thing? Just to look at the quality of content is featured snippets. So we'll be discussing more about that, I think, down the line. But I don't want to get ahead of myself.
Yes,
but that plays a really good aspect of content. Okay. And then just I think, you know, when it comes to declining content,
that's the next thing I wanted to ask about. So tell me a little bit more what that means, declining, like share a bit more.
So basically, Aldine, if your site's organic traffic is actually doing well, some of your pages can actually decline over time. And your page rankings really last forever. So you need to actually make the conscious effort to republish and refresh your content that starts to decline. And one of the ways of actually finding declining content is using Google Search Console. And that's a really handy tool to use. Once you've actually identified declining content on your website, you also need to make sure your page still aligns with search intent. And then see if your page neglected any subtopics that searchers might be looking for, which you can actually do in Ahrefs. This is the system and tool that we use.
Okay.
All you need to actually do is paste the URL of your page into Ahrefs Site Explorer.
Brilliant.
Then you just need to go to Content Gap Report and paste it in the URLs of 2 and 3.
Okay.
That's in similar top ranking pages, and click Show Keywords.
So how about this, Grant? Sorry to stop you there, but how about this? After our first series today, let's form a loom where we actually show the screen of Ahrefs, drop in even our URL, and then we can help the user or the audience to see, for anybody who is watching the video, for podcasts and audio, those that can't see, we can always share a link with them to a loom.
Definitely.
Because I think that makes sense. Because sometimes, you know, when you can't visually connect to something, it does become quite a complicated process, I guess, to understand. I know what you're talking about, but I'm trying to put my
yeah. So it's hard to kind of, but I think that's a really good idea, and I'm more than happy to share a link on a separate.
And then we can share that with anyone who's interested. Okay, super. So let's move on then to title tags and meta descriptions, because that's always a part of an audit, and we share those reports with our clients. And I've even had some clients asking, is this going to be published, or is it behind the scenes in the back end of the website? So for anybody who's never heard of the term, or who has but hasn't really wanted to ask because they don't necessarily understand, tell us more about those.
So you basically are there, Aldine, and I think basically these are actually the first things that your audience will see on Google search results on the first page. So when you're typing a specific keyword or getting to something, you'll see a headline description and a description. Sorry, you'll see an actual headline with a description. So your headline in that Google on the first page of Google is actually your title tag. Then you've got your meta description, which falls part of the description. So these kind of relate to Google ads. Normally they have the title, the actual title tag, and your meta description. And the same applies to blog articles. They also have your title tags and meta description. So these are basically...
If I were to say, for layman's terms again, when I tap in to Google, I'm looking for that red secondhand Toyota, it's going to bring up all the results. And I know another acronym here that people will be impressed by, and that's SERP. It's your search engine result page. And that's the page that populates on my screen. And then the ads are often the ones that are at the top, and you can actually see in bold it says ad, right? So we know those are paid for. So if we're trying to find
something... It will say sponsored if it's paid for, and non-sponsored will be organic content. So that's really that you've got good, valuable content.
Yes. And so often as the person doing the searching, the ads always feel like a hard sell, that somebody's trying to get me to pay, whereas I might just be looking for information. So often... Correct. Will scroll down, and then you have all the different search engine pages that ultimately what our job as Pearl Lemon is that we want to get our clients onto page one, right? Through doing SEO.
It's always about the number one.
Exactly, and as high up as possible on that page. So the more we can share about how we do that, the easier it is then for somebody to come to us and trust us with this expertise. So you were talking about the title, the meta description that comes up, looks like it is almost the same format as an ad, right? A PPC ad.
And they're both relevant to one another, Aldine. So basically your title tag has your main primary keyword in it, and your meta description will include both primary and secondary keywords. But you get different forms of meta descriptions, and especially when you're doing Google ads, which obviously is a separate thing to SEO organic, but I think it's kind of the same practices you would adopt when you're doing SEO. So when you're obviously setting up Google ads, you can actually do three types of title tags and meta descriptions to mix and match, like very much like A-B testing or ABC testing. So Google Ads obviously offers that alternative, where you can have different type of content related to your audience.
Well, we'll record another knowledge share on that.
Yes.
Then there's also the Google Display Network ads, and I think those each have their own little bucket. But thanks for that. That's really, really helpful. Then let's move on to FAQs, because it seems to be a hot topic at the moment that a lot of search pages are being found, or websites are being found through having FAQs on your site, because you then are answering a question that somebody's got in their mind, and you're already going to dish them up the answer without them even connecting with anybody, and then related searches to FAQs.
Yes.
So tell us more.
So this is actually the important part of where people, where most people actually miss out on. So, I mean, if you actually go to Google and you type in a specific keyword you're looking for, or a product or whatever it may be, right at the bottom of Google, you'll see FAQs. So there's other related FAQs, frequently asked questions relating to that specific topic you're looking for. So in this sense, what you should do is actually whatever topic or product or service you're chatting about, you should actually go to Google, type it in, and actually get an idea of what frequently asked questions they are relating to that. So it's kind of like Googling Google, but you also want to the closest type of, you want kind of the closest source of frequently asked questions relating to their products. So, but with related searches, it's right at the bottom of Google. So that's kind of very similar searches to the specific topic you're looking for. I would also include that in the body of the content right at the bottom. Cool. So normally at the end of your article, that will feature. Okay. But also, Aldine, you are actually unlikely to rank for questions that you don't answer, which can actually cause you to miss out on long tail traffic. So it's really hard to get the correct type of question someone would ask for, but you never know. You might hit the jackpot when it comes to that. Yeah. So
yes. Okay, but the more content you've got up there that has been very strategically placed because of this, the keywords and the SEO, is how you're going to create that organic traffic versus having yes. to pay the media budget, which PPC and GDN obviously require, right? So thank you for that. So now you can start talking about that term that you used just now, which is snippets.
Featured snippets, yes.
Google AdWords and featured snippets. Tell us why that's important in SEO.
So Aldine, I don't know if you are aware, you obviously seen it yourself, but I think for our audience out there, I think for them to understand, a featured snippet is basically one of the special boxes where the format of a regular result is reversed. And that basically shows the descriptive snippet in your content article first. So in this case, it won't show the actual title and description, you know, of your content piece. It will show just a small snippet review of content that is relatable to Google, which Google picks up. Okay. You can actually also win a snippet, like for instance, a high volume term, and can shortcut your way to number one position on Google. Okay. And that will dramatically increase organic traffic to your page. All right. So some featured snippets are also easier to win than others. So it also pays to prioritize low-hanging opportunities. And these are basically the keywords with decent monthly search volumes where you currently rank in the top 10.
Okay.
And Google also already knows, can show the featured snippets. So in other industries, there might be, you know, your competitors might have featured snippets, but to obviously better that, you can actually find keywords in Ahrefs, Site Explorer, by entering your domain, and then you can actually get indications of really good featured snippets in that platform.
So I mentioned Google AdWords. Where does that come in with regards to this whole process?
So Google AdWords is a separate thing. Featured snippets are more to do with organic content itself. So that will be basically really good, compelling content through specific keywords that you've used within your article. And basically on that kind of snippet, that's kind of more relative to Google. What triggers Google?
No budget. Once again, it's all organic because you've put that up onto the site. Okay, so that's awesome. So then
can I just also say one thing, Aldine? I forgot to mention this. Basically, featured snippets is actually, it's a case of looking for featured snippets that contain information you haven't included in your page. So maybe in your current article, you know, after all, there's no way that Google can actually pull the snippet from your page if there's no content related to that there in your article.
Got it. Yeah. All right. So it lives in the back end of the website. It's not actually published.
It is actually published. It's literally a snippet from your article.
It comes up as a little, and then you could almost read more like that.
Exactly. Okay. Yes.
Perfect. So there you go. There's another a way of asking a question when you don't want to sound stupid. Now I've got that answer. So then let's move on to link building, because, I mean, everybody hears it and we have it backlinks and internal links, etc. Tell us more about that and why it's so important for SEO, Grant.
Well, you know, I think, Aldine, one of the first things you need to get right is internal linking. It all starts with internal linking, right? So basically, internal linking is actually from one page of your website to another, and it basically connects your content to other relevant content, more relatable content. Let's put it that way. And it also helps your visitors to get from one page to page, and it also helps to distribute page rank within your site. And that's a really good thing for passing authority with Google. And you can find also internal linking opportunities in a few ways, but the actual link opportunity report in, I think, yeah, in Ahrefs site audit is by far the easiest and quickest. Another thing I'd like to add is internal links also help search engine crawlers find your content and encourage users to stay on your site longer. So I think to get the basics right first, the most fundamental aspects of any sort of page linking starts with internal linking and then to external linking and then backlinks.
Now, question, because it came up with a client the other day.
Yes.
Do social media links qualify as an internal link? So if I've got my Facebook and my Twitter and my YouTube and I'm getting clicks on those, do those qualify because they're my links?
That's more in the external category, which relates to outbound links. So, you know, your social media platforms, although they're connected to your website, the icons themselves, they're still an external platform. So, you know, although that social media link relates to your specific company or page or what or individual or person, it's still seen as an external link.
Okay, but internal it qualifies link, as a link, though. It still qualifies as a link. Those clicks still show
correct.
Okay.
Yes. And the nice thing is with social media, you know, this is a discussion for another day, but you can actually pick up an holistic overview of all your clicks through all your social media platforms to your website.
That's nice, because you're looking at the traffic and where it's coming from.
From an holistic angle, yes.
From a holistic angle. So then tell us more about backlinks.
So backlinks are basically external links from other websites which lead to your website.
Okay.
And it's a very, very critical ranking factor that Google sees. And it's really difficult to get backlinks because this is why there's a lot of value and time put into it to get backlinks. And, you know, most people do guest blogging and stuff like that or offer to write on other, similar relatable industry like websites, you know, or to share content. But I think it's definitely one of the hardest things to acquire. But and another thing you need to...
As an example, I'm a fashion store online, and I showcase my different brands that I'm selling. Then do I go to maybe a manufacturer or to somebody that has accessories or some industry-related sites, and I say, hey, would you feature my website on your site? Is that how it works for backlinks?
Oh, most definitely. Any sort of links relating to your website, content pieces, anything relating to your industry itself that you can partner with. Just see them as a partner. Exactly. That would be very relevant.
Google recognizes, because that now brings traffic to my site. It makes my site look active. I'm up to date with content all the time. I'm optimizing and making sure my keywords are in the metadata title and description. And so that this all starts working together now for anyone. They can start seeing the picture of how SEO is not just a one-step process.
Not at all.
A compounding. And so when clients say, so can I see results next week? The answer is generally patience. And let's just roll out at least 1 month, because in that 1 month, you're doing the auditing, etc. And then you need it to start kicking in, right, and compounding. So when SEO agencies are saying we need 3 months to start seeing some form of effectiveness,
100%.
It really is a three-month process.
It's a long-term process, definitely.
Okay. Anything more on linking, or shall we?
Well, just one thing I'd love to keep our audience in mind is that you need to also keep in mind, you know, backlinking, it doesn't necessarily mean that your page needs hundreds or thousands of backlinks to stand a chance of ranking.
Right.
It actually depends how competitive the topic is that you're chatting about. So the more competitive the keyword, the reality is, Aldine, you'll be actually needing a heck of a lot of backlinks. And that will take time to generate. But and obviously with low competitor, you know, keywords, backlinking will become much more feasible. That's kind of your low-hanging fruits. Another form of backlinking, like I said, is also guest posting, which is like guest blogging. But that just means writing and publishing an article on someone else's website, ideally in your same niche or industry, like you mentioned, in
the fashion industry.
In the fashion industry, you know, you might want to approach a fashion retailer or a fashion kind of a middle.
A wholesaler or a
wholesaler. Yes.
Great. And then I just need to raise something because I know this does come up a lot as well, is you can have 100 backlinks, but if 60% of them are toxic, tell us what a toxic backlink is.
So those are basically links that are normally have the 404 mentioned. So those could be articles that are non-existent anymore from other page owners. So you always need to ensure that your links are actually working, and you can obviously run an audit through Ahrefs or SEMrush.
Okay, so that website might have agreed to host my URL, and then they shut the website down or they unpublish that page, and suddenly this is now registered by Google as a toxic backlink. Okay, that's good to know, because I know that that does come up in conversation. So let's get on to our last topic so that we don't keep...
And then, Aldeen, just to also keep our audience in mind, with regards to external linking, it's literally just the opposite of internal linking. So those basically lead a user to another website out of your website. Yeah. So you can obviously use these to link to websites with quality, authoritative content on the topic you're actually writing about. And it's
internal also, is within the site from page to page. External is offsite.
Correct. That's correct, yes.
Awesome. Well, now we come to actually usually where a lot of clients start when they come to us with their pain, and that is that my site is too slow. It takes 10 seconds to load. Fix it, please, quickly. And the reason that I'm asking this is because I've just had this experience. Tell us the importance of page speed first, and then we'll go and look at some of the elements that affect that. And okay, we're using desktop and mobile now as well. It would be nice to get both.
Definitely. I think, you know, mobile is a very critical part, especially with a majority of the world's population is on mobile, and the majority of the percentage of time spent on the internet is through a mobile phone. So the first thing one needs to get right, Aldeen, is the actual user experience of your website, and it needs to be customizable to mobile and desktop.
Okay.
So if you don't get that right, you're not really going to, your audiences are not really going to, your users are not going to have a really good user experience. And that refers to UI, user experience.
Yes.
And that falls actually under conversion rate optimization, which is a discussion for another day.
Yes, so, one of those acronyms, CRO.
Yes. So page speed actually has a combination of both CRO and SEO. They kind of work hand in hand together. Mm-hmm. And basically, let's say if a page loads too slowly, users are actually unlikely to stick around. And that increases your bounce rate, number one. And the page's loading time is one of the three core web vitals and a ranking factor. So you need to obviously get that right.
Yeah, because it's instant gratification that we're all after, right? If I can't get it on that site, I'm going to bounce and search something else.
Yeah, and you can actually just hop onto Google Page Speed Insights, where you can actually, it's a free SEO tool that scores your desktop and mobile page speed. And it's normally on a scale of 0 to 100. So I would say anything over an average score of 70 is really in good standing, but anything kind of below that, you need a bit of work and tweaks there and there to optimize your pages accordingly.
Okay. To clarify, you're talking score now, not page speed, right? Page speed should be under like how many seconds?
I would say it also depends the nature on how big your website is. Everything is relevant to one another. But I mean, if you just got a landing page website, I would say probably up to 3 seconds or 2 seconds.
Okay. And some of the heavier sites with lots of content might be up to what, 5 or 7 seconds?
I would say, that's a bit too long, actually.
Anything over already. 5, you're hitting the red zone, right?
Pretty much.
Maybe under 5. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Before we move on, anything more just on the overview of page speed, or shall we move on to images? And obviously that includes graphics and how those affect page speed and what you would do to optimize those.
Yeah, just one thing in reference to page speed as well, Aldeen. You know, like I said, if your page actually loads too slowly, you also need to look for page elements that might be increasing your load time. So you can also, for example, you can actually have unnecessary plugins in your website.
Yes.
And you need to actually try remove them to increase your page's speed. But moving on, like you said, to images, these also play a crucial part when it comes to, well, let's say images and graphics on your website. These play a crucial part in page speed.
Okay, because I mean, we've just also had an incident with a client that had 250 plugins on their site. They came to us with a site speed issue. And what we've actually done is we've taken them off one CMS platform and put them onto WordPress, which is what we specialize in. And from 250 plugins, I think we're sitting at about 5. So often when websites are built, having a million different plugins or all the different functionality is often excessive, because simple is best in most industries, right?
Correct. And it also depends on the functionality of those websites are built on. So that can have a hindering factor. So WordPress is one of the longest standing and most credible platforms. I think it's close to over 60% of the world's population uses WordPress websites. Yes.
Which means it's supported, and it means that there's constant updates on types of plugins, the speed of those plugins, the integrations of those plugins, et cetera, which is what I've definitely been able to convince a client to move over to it because of exactly this, because it's not worth optimizing SEO on a site that's not functioning because it's sluggish and it's got too many plugins. You want a good, solid, healthy site first, and then you put the SEO execution onto that, right? Otherwise, you're just wasting clients' money, and that's something that we definitely don't want to do.
Totally. This is only why we work with selected key, websites as well, which is in our speciality.
Yeah. Brilliant. Okay, so tell us just a little bit more then, what do you do with images? Because when you upload images, you've got explain to us how that works.
So basically, there's 5 areas that you need to look at when it comes to image and graphics. The first lies within your size and formatting. Okay, so
so that's pixels.
You need to look at your image size and the file type. That actually works best for your readers. So if an image is actually too large, it could slow down your page. But if the file type...
And are we talking PNG or JPEG? Which is the preferred?
Well, PNG, JPEG are perfectly fine, but as long as the size and the formatting of it, if the file type isn't actually supported, the image might not even load at all. These are the test areas that you have to do when you're doing your page speed tests. So, and this obviously comes through to the design department. They obviously need to get these things right.
Yes.
Then there's the accessibility part. You always need to include descriptive alt text for each image.
Okay.
That's also a great way for SEO to pick up your pictures. So, when you type in a specific topic or product, whatever, or a person, you really get those, you get those kind of images, or especially on shopping, when you're shopping for something, you'll get an image. All of those have alt text in it. And that basically relates to a certain brand or name. It's a naming convention description for images.
So in layman's terms, I'm saying that this picture is young girl, red dress with a balloon. So the alt text is the labeling of that. So somebody keys into search girl red dress or girl balloon, and Google will pick up that image actually as something that they can deliver as part of the search results.
And Aldine, you've hit the nail on the head. And it also creates opportunities to integrate more supporting keywords for that nature of topic, especially within your articles. If it's a blog article, you'll have an image, a few images. All of your images need to at least have alt text relating to what that is, because Google can't pick up on a picture, but if there's alt text, they can actually pick up the nature of what that content's about.
So we go all the way back to the audit, and Pearl Lemon will, when they audit the site, come up with all of these areas that need to be improved. We then share that with the customer. Then we say, right, are you in agreement that this is what we're going to do? Because sometimes there's a debate around, well, I don't actually want this to change, etc., or I don't want to lose some of my blogs. And we showcase, but hold on, too many blogs with competing keywords or too many keywords competing with each other on different pages on the site is not going to do them any good, right? Because Google then sees it as, what is the term? What does Google see that as?
I would say it's more of a conflicting error. So you need to obviously, there's conicalization, but that's a different discussion when it comes
to... Yes, we'll do that too, and on another Another knowledge.
I think, you know, always try and keep your keyword specific or your alt text imaging for your alt text naming conventions for your images. Try and keep it relevant to that specific image. And that will obviously set it apart.
Okay.
And then the next thing is just obviously context. You need to provide context for your images by placing them beside relevant text on your page.
Okay, good to know. Yes, they can't just be thrown in and not be, because it'll confuse the reader, which then, of course...
And this obviously goes to do with your H1, H2, H3 headings. It's always good to have kind of images relating to those. So, but as long as your images are placed under the relevant topic of discussion. So if you're talking about, let's use automotive, a specific type of engine feature for a car, you need to have that image embedded under the H2 or if it's a H1 heading, per se.
Okay. Awesome. Well, that has been very insightful. Is there anything else you'd like to share before we wrap up?
Well, I think that, there's just two more aspects to images and graphics. So you've also got linking for images. Aldine, I didn't know if our audience understands this. So this is another form of external linking, but you can actually create descriptive names and logical URL structures for your images. So if you've got a piece of content, an image in your article, that will basically go out of your website to that specific URL.
Okay.
But that's a specific structure you've put in place that Google can read.
Okay.
And that actually helps to optimize to share your pictures on their sites for other people's sites. That can actually grant you backlinks as well. Okay. Funny enough.
So when I hover over an image and it is clickable, intuitively, I think users nowadays know to hover over and click. Even words, if a word is highlighted or is underscored or is bold, often you don't have to say click here. Intuitively, the user knows that that's going to take them somewhere either inside the site or off the site. Well, you said there were two things.
And that's relating to infographics. So if you've got a detailed infographic, it might be slightly small, but you can actually click on it and enlarge it. That will take you to a different page with that URL structure naming convention on there. So... Okay. That's quite important to keep in mind.
Brilliant.
And then lastly, we always need to remember to test your pages on mobile and desktop. So you need to do this over time.
I love that. I love that. In fact, sometimes I haven't had access to my desktop and I've quickly done a test on mobile and then I see things which I might not have noticed. So I think that is an excellent thing to wrap up with. And in fact, from this discussion, Grant, we have about 10 more knowledge share sessions that we definitely need to do, breaking down some of those specifics. So thank you for today, and we'll see you for series 2 sometime soon. And if there are any questions, then we can just
thank you for having me. It's been really great to be part of it, and I think the more we speak, the more we kind of learn, and it's thank kind you. Of repetition just to kind That's of learn from one another in that respect. So thank you so much, Aldine, and looking forward to the next session.
Thank you, Grant. Thank you so much.